Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Richard Gilbert. I represented Mr. Blackson on the direct appeal, but I did not represent him at the trial in this matter. I did not represent him in the resentencing that is issued in this appeal. However, while I was representing him on appeal, I did represent him in connection with his testimony in the John Gooch case. I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. And absent questions from the court, what I'd like to address is the government's theory as raised in their brief, which I have called a hybrid argument. It was not the argument that they raised below. Below, they argued that this was a clerical error, that the district court's role was purely ministerial. In one of their pleadings, they actually said the court's jurisdiction was limited to count 31, which is the erroneous conviction. It's probably less significant that that's what the government argued below, as it is the fact that that is the position that Judge Collier specifically adopted. She said, I'm accepting Mr. Dominguez, who's here, the prosecutor's argument that this was a merely ministerial function.
Could I pause over that?
Certainly.
Let's look together at appendix page 66.
Yes, Your
Honor. So it's lines 16 to 23 where the ministerial point is. And I read it differently, so I'm just going to read it and tell me why I'm doing this wrong. It says, I think rather, as Mr. Dominguez kind of suggests, given the number of counts and the complexity of this all with the multiple defendants and everything, the circuit did not want to presume how this count improperly included in the judgment might have influenced the judgment, and without it might some way fall, and so they sent it back for that purpose alone. So I don't think, and to that extent, I accept the ministerial point made by the government. So while I think you're correct that the government did make the claim that all you have to do is vacate, the district court understood, and I think properly understood, that what we were sending this back for was to determine how that count, quote, as she says, might have influenced the judgment. So I think that's right. That's what we said in Lyons was going to be our general approach. That's what we said in Wren, that we said in Lyons was our general approach.
Well, let me then address that, because I do think other comments by Judge Collier indicated she really did feel that she was handcuffed in significant ways.
But on that way, let's start with that way. It doesn't sound to me like, I understand she felt herself handcuffed in some ways, but in that way, what makes you think she was handcuffed? In other words, we sent it back. We said, we're vacating this count. We don't know whether this count affected the overall sentence. You should make a determination consistent with that problem. And she did. She went on and said that at the bottom of the next page, appendix 68, I also conclude that that count really was just an additional count, but it carried no independent weight as to the sentence of 360 months consecutive that Mr. Blackson is serving. That sounds like exactly the right way to deal with this question.
Well, then I suggest you moving on to the legal point, if you assume that it's raised and that's what the judge is saying, that the fact is that's wrong. That's not what the law is. Now,
what do you think the law is now?
I think the law after Booker and after Pepper is that when a case comes back to a court, a district court for resentencing, that court must now apply not just the sentencing guidelines, that court must apply the factors in 3553A, which are quite broad.
Oh, you think it's a de facto? It's always a de facto.
I would think unless there might be some particular circumstances which this court could specifically say you can only do this much to the sentencing. But you didn't say that here.
Well,
you sent it back for resentencing.
We have a general rule, the Wren rule, which is incorporated into our jurisprudence here, which is in a case where we don't say the court is allowed only to consider whether the vacation of one count affects others, and whether if there is new evidence or evidence newly relevant. That's our rule. That's incorporated in where we said in Wren, wherever we don't explicitly say, that's what we mean.
I know, Judge, but you said that in Wren before Booker.
I know, I understand that, but do you think that Pepper requires a de novo review?
Yes.
Okay.
In almost every circumstance.
But in which circumstance doesn't it?
Well, let's suppose it's a circumstance where what you do is you vacate a mandatory minimum.
Yeah.
And you say, okay, that mandatory minimum goes. Then possibly that would be limited to the judge, and I'm just sort of speculating.
What about our typical Booker remand, where which we don't have to do, fortunately, too much anymore, but where the district court wrongly thought that the guidelines were mandatory, we sent it back just to determine what you would have done if they weren't.
You think? But in doing that, yeah, after Booker, yeah, they are then supposed to look at the factors in 3553A.
Okay, then I'd ask you to look with me at Pepper itself. And look at footnote 17.
One moment.
Sure.
All right, I'm with you, Judge.
Okay, so the sentence in footnote 17 is, nor do we mean to preclude courts of appeals from issuing limited remand orders in appropriate cases that may render evidence of post-sentencing rehabilitation irrelevant in light of the narrow purposes of the remand proceeding. And then it cites the Sanchez case approvingly. Doesn't that mean that we can issue a limited remand order?
I suppose it does, but you didn't here.
Well, but we have a limited, there's nothing about Booker that requires us, there's nothing about the theory of Booker that requires us to change from our general rule, which is if we don't say anything, this is the limited remand, one where we have to be explicit. Booker says nothing about the wording of a remand.
What is the limited remand here? Realistically, what is the judge then supposed to do when you tell her you've got to relook at your sentencing scheme because one of those convictions was erroneous? Is the judge not supposed to consider the factors in 3553A?
The judge is supposed to do the limited remand as we say. And if we look closely, the thing to do would be to look at what happened in Sanchez, which is the example that the court gave. So you know what happened in Sanchez.
No.
So in Sanchez, it's exactly that case I put to you, which was the court did its typical what they called an Ammaline remand, and the defendant made exactly the arguments you're making here, which are that it should be de facto. And the circuit said, well, no, that's not the rule. A district court, and I'm quoting from the opinion, a district court is without authority to consider new challenges raised for the first time by a defendant on a limited Ammaline remand. This rule is not unique to an Ammaline remand. We have long held, and then it goes on. So it seems to me that there's nothing in Pepper that limits the authority of a appellate court to limit its remand, unless there's something I'm missing. I understand the point that if the district court had thought the guidelines were mandatory, then of course Pepper says and Booker says they have to redo it. And Pepper also says that a district court may consider new evidence, namely evidence of rehabilitation. But the evidence we're talking about here, except for the Gooch stuff, which I think is your best point, is not new evidence. So I don't see what Booker or Pepper has to do with this.
Well, I mean, frankly, you've just teed it up for me, because one of the points is, can they go ahead and consider what happened after Mr. Blackson was sentenced?
That's a far more narrower question than the de facto question, isn't it?
Well, they only raised two substantive issues in the resentencing, right? One of them was, look, Judge, you can go back and reconsider the managerial role, and you can consider whether or not you believe Mr. Blackson was testifying at some legal personal risk on behalf of a defendant about something of which he believed the defendant was innocent. Those are the only two issues we raised. I think that Pepper says, look, you know, even the first ruling is not law of the case, but certainly Pepper and this court has recognized subsequently in Rhodes that post-rehabilitation contact can be considered. And, you know, the judge didn't make any findings on that. That's the problem. You could read her ruling as saying, oh, well, it wouldn't have affected me. And that might make sense if she'd actually made some factual findings, but she did not. I see that my time has expired.
Didn't she say that, again on page 68, well, I find, so one side had said that the fact that he was testifying in favor of his, I guess at one point, co-defendant was admirable. The other side said it was perjurious. And the district court said, well, I don't have to go there to find that testimony, whether admirable, honorable, discoverable, or perjurious, whatever it was. I don't think it has an impact on how I should consider sentencing for the crimes for which Mr. Blackson was convicted.
And that seems to me, Judge, subject to, and I appreciate your indulging me on this issue, it seems to me to be subject to one of two interpretations. It could be that that is reflecting her view of what we argue is an overly limited jurisdiction. And so she's saying, look, I just can't go there based on what I understand the law to be. Another interpretation would be, oh, yes, I've carefully considered this, and I just don't think this has any impact on my decision. That last argument, which would certainly go to harmless error, that last argument would be much more persuasive if, in fact, she'd indicated she made some factual findings. I cannot imagine Judge Collier or any district judge who...
Why is a factual finding required? She says she doesn't care whether he lied or he told the truth. She just doesn't think it's relevant for her for the question of... It's not something that affects her decision about the overall sentence.
And I can't imagine...
These are things he did later as compared to the crimes he committed.
Right. I can't imagine... Let's put it this way. District judges, Judge Collier and all of them, routinely... every week give reduced sentences to people who testify in other cases for the government. I cannot imagine that Judge Collier or any other judge in this courthouse would have a flat rule that says, I don't care if he testified truthfully about another man's innocence at risk, legal risk to himself. I don't care about that. I cannot imagine that would be her position. Had she found that Mr. Blackson's testimony was perjurious, She could have, but we view the fact she could have increased the sentence. But she didn't make that finding. She didn't go there, and that I don't think that's a fair reflection of how, given how carefully she considered the other issues in this case, whether she reached the wrong conclusion, as we argue, or not. She clearly spent time on it. I can't imagine she would just make this blanket statement that I don't care what he did later would make any difference to me. I just can't imagine that would be the case. She presided over the Gooch trial as well.
Okay, thank you. We'll hear from the government.
Good morning. May it please the court, Nick Coleman for the United States. I'd like to begin by addressing the claim made by appellant here today that Pepper somehow requires a de novo resentencing in every case. I think that the language that you cited, Your Honor, from footnote 17 puts that theory to rest. Obviously, the Supreme Court contemplated that courts of appeals could issue limited remands that would confine the nature of any resentencing or recalculation of a sentence upon its return to the district court. And I think in this case, where this court has a general rule that it adopted in Wren, there is no way to read the remand in the Wilson case from 2010 that remanded this case as anything but a limited remand. If you look at the language of Wilson, the first thing this court did in Wilson with respect to Mr. Blackson was to affirm his convictions on all the legal grounds that he raised, except for the erroneous count 31. Then the court turned to the challenges to his remaining sentences and affirmed all of the sentences that Judge Collier had imposed. It is difficult to read that case as meaning anything but that the only thing that Judge Collier was being asked to do upon remand was to decide whether or not, consistent with Lyons, count 31 had an impact on the other sentences.
Well, how is it possible to read the Wren case in any way as consistent with your position that she could not consider the Gooch testimony?
Because I think what Wren said, and I think the operative language of Wren was that upon a resentencing occasioned by a remand, unless the Court of Appeals expressly directs otherwise, the district court may consider only such new arguments or new facts as are made newly relevant by the Court of Appeals decision, whether by the reasoning or by the result. There was nothing in the reasoning or the result of this court's earlier opinion that would suggest that.
It's the later phrase. A defendant should not be held to have waived an issue if he did not have a reason to raise it at his original sentencing. And in Rhodes, we specifically interpreted Wren to say where there was new information or information newly made relevant, it could be raised. How do you distinguish new information about rehabilitation, which was not in any way made relevant by the remand, but just happened to occur afterwards?
Well, there are two aspects, I think, to the Wren decision that have to be sort of kept in mind.
Tell me how would you distinguish Rhodes, the information in Rhodes, which was evidence of rehabilitation which had arisen after the remand, from this case, testimony in Gooch, which arose after the remand?
The distinction we're drawing is not between the character of the evidence. In other words, there's not a distinction between the evidence of rehabilitation or the testimony at Larry Gooch's trial. The distinction is in what was the scope of the remand. In Rhodes, this court held that there was no limitation on the remand itself, and it's clear why, and that's because in that case, the district court was going to have to recalculate the actual sentence on the narcotics count.
Well, that's not right at all.
That's not what Rhodes
says. Rhodes says, maybe we're both going to quote from the same part, but it says, we remanded for, quote, for possible resentencing taking into account the provisions of 2D1.1B1. This was a Bailey remand, right? This was a using and carrying problem. And it was remanded. It was not remanded to a general remand to consider anything. And yet we said that when we generally remand, you are allowed to take into consideration evidence of rehabilitation.
Yes, but however, this court said that the language was open-ended. It talked about open-ended language that said, you know, that nothing limited the trial court to the mechanical application of the guidelines weapon enhancement. In other words, that was not the only issue that the court was permitted to address. The remand.
It seems like you're just fighting an impossible reading. I don't even know why the government would press the reading. It's so clear what Rhodes said about Wren in saying that if something happens after sentencing, we can consider, the district court consider, claims of rehabilitation, and they should be factored in. Why would the government fight that? And it's clearly there. It is absolutely there.
Because I think there's a difference between what is considered to be a waived argument. In other words, I think when you look at Rhodes, it was trying to consider the question of what has a defendant actually waived from the original sentencing to the current sentencing. And obviously a new factor or new evidence could not have been waived at the earlier sentencing. The question of what was the scope of the remand is a different one. It's not so much what has the defendant waived
Rhodes
from one proceeding to the next.
Rhodes does not say the only time a district court judge can consider claims of rehabilitation post-sentencing is when the remand is open-ended. That's not what Rhodes says.
Well,
that is absolutely not what Rhodes says.
Well, I think otherwise.
I'm looking at the language. That is not a condition that is laid on the Rhodes decision.
I think otherwise.
You've made it up. And I don't understand why. You're wrong in what you're saying, and I don't even understand as a policy matter why you're doing this. Why don't you argue as if you believe what we're suggesting and then answer the question? Let's assume maybe we're right. So tell us what the government position would be if our reading of Rhodes is correct.
Well, if it were correct that the district court was entitled to look at these new evidence, we think in this case Judge Collier has already clearly indicated that the testimony of appellant at Mr. Gooch's trial was simply not relevant to her. She did not think that it should affect the sentence, as she said, for the crimes for which he had been committed. So there is absolutely no way to read the record of what she said at this resentencing to indicate that it would have made any difference.
You don't think she was saying she didn't have the authority to do it?
No, I don't think so, because
what are you pointing to specifically to support your claim that she was saying, in effect, there's no merit to this claim that's being advanced? I'm assuming I might be able to consider it, but I just don't find it meritorious. I wouldn't downward depart for this.
Because when she talked about what she figured she could not consider, she was talking about revisiting the question of appellant's leadership role.
Right.
There she said, look, I would really love to have looked at this anew, she said, because she said she'd had more experience as a judge. She looked at more defendants in connection with this case in subsequent trials. But that was the aspect that she felt that she could not revisit. She then turned to the subject of Mr. Gooch's testimony, of Mr. Gooch's trial and appellant's testimony at that, and said it just doesn't impact that. So I don't think that she was categorizing this in the same way.
It's perplexing. I don't know that you should know any more than we can figure out. Is she saying that the argument is so bizarre I don't even know what to do with it, or what? What has no impact? What does that mean?
Well, I think it's pretty clear from context. And again, I think context is important to understanding what she said. I think it's also important, and the reason why we think that Rhodes doesn't mean what appellant argues it means. You have to look again at the context. And I think in context, her comments clearly indicate that it doesn't matter whether or not his testimony was perjurious or honorable, but it doesn't affect the crimes for which he was committed, she said. It doesn't affect the sentence that she wanted, that she felt should be imposed. So in this case, I think this court wouldn't even have to reach the question of whether or not Rhodes permits, even on a limited remand of this kind, a Lyons remand, for various new subjects to come in. I don't even think this court needs to reach that question because of what Judge Collins.
Well, we might want to help you in the future so that you won't have any confusion over what Rhodes means.
Well, the
your boss over there is smiling too.
We'd submit that, given the confusion between them, it may not be necessary to reach that. If there are no further questions, we would respectfully submit that the judgment of the district court should be affirmed. Thank you.
Is there any time left? We'll give you another minute. If you want it, you don't have to.
I just want to leave the court with one thought. When we sort of talk about the harmless error or what the judge meant, there's no question an experienced trial judge like Judge Collier knows how to make and protect a record, and I don't mean that in a negative sense. She could easily have said, look, I agree with the government's legal position, but I'm telling you all right now that even if I had the discretion that the defense says I do, I would still have imposed the same sentence.
She could say that, but she is an experienced trial judge, and Rhodes is clearly the law, and the government's argument on this is completely out of bounds. So I don't see any reason why she should have presumed that in this one case, as compared to every other case in which we remand, she wouldn't have the authority to consider new evidence. And if that's the presumption that she begins with, that our law is the law, that then there's no reason for her to go to an extensive discussion on this question.
Well, I just think if she had said that, we wouldn't be here today.
Yeah, there's, you know, every day, if we made the district judges do that, we would be sending every case back.
And you would have been here today anyway.
Yeah, you would have been here. All right. We will take the case under submission. Mr. Gilbert, you were appointed by the court to represent the appellant in this case. You've done your usual fine job, and we appreciate your assistance.